So this is from Rabbi Foreman's new book. Thank you, Phyllis, for sponsoring my education. I'm going to base my share on what he says, but I'm not going to tell you exactly what he says because you should get the book and read what he says. You don't need me to tell you. You're perfectly capable of reading. But he starts by looking at the description of Bat Paro rescues Moshe. He's been a little babe in the bulrushes. Materet Bat Paro l'rchutz al yar. The daughter of Paro went to bathe by the Nile, and her maidservants were walking on at the edge of the Nile, and she sees the basket in the reeds, and she stretches forth her hand, she sends her maidservants, her ama, and she took the basket. And it's the Gemara talking about what that means. Matisaka Amata is Rabbi Huda, Rabbi Nechemia have two different opinions. Chara Mayada, one of them says, no, Amata means her hand, her forearm is her Hama. The Chara Mar Shifchata. And the other said, Ama is her maid's right.
So, well, because like Ama, like the length of an Ama is the length of your
forearm, right. And Gemara with some discussion and says Lomanda Amar Yada Lichtov Yada. So the problem with saying it was her hand is that that's not the expression. The expression is Vishloach Yad. You don't grab something with your forearm. You grab it with your hand. So Noah stretches. You know, Vishloach Yado to take the Yonah back specifically. Moshe in this week's parsha when he's told to pick up the staff that turned into a snake. Send your hand up.
So it means hand. Because she's taking something. So we're implying the end digits.
Right. And that's that even just as an idiom. That's not the idiom in the Torah. It's Tishlach Yad. Yeah. So why not say Yad? If you want to interpret the word to mean her hand, why not say hand? Why say Amar forearm? A Kamash Moran, because teacher, Ishtarabubi, which is a funny word. It's that it became Rav, it became much longer. As Steinsel translate, Yadat Titarcha Amot Rabbe. That she sent forth her forearm and it just stretched out until she could reach this basket.
Right, the kids all have the projects with them.
Yeah, so he specifically mentioned, Rabbi Foreman specifically mentions getting this project from his kids in kindergarten with a long hand there. And he's not sure what to do with it because it's kind of weird. That's his problem, right? What is this? And this is his word. Some folks look at this and find themselves suppressing the urge to roll their eyes and think, this seems like the strangest interpretation of the world. Why can't the rabbis just leave a perfectly fine story the way it is? Behind the skepticism is an important question. Can the rabbis themselves possibly truly believe the interpretation? Right? Rabbi Nechemi really meant to think that, okay, what happened was her arm stretched. Imagine in our case, that events really transpired the way the sages of the Midrash say it transpired. I don't know about you, but if I were the princess, I would drop everything and run all the way back to the palace screaming, my arm, where's my arm?
He really writes this?
That's a quote.
Okay.
You can read the book. What do you do with Agadata? So that's his introduction, and then his essay basically is about how you approach Midrash Agadah. And I'm going to be specific to say, he uses the word Midrash here, but that's technically not right. Because Midrash means how do I read the Torah in the light of the Torah 12 path? There's Pshat, which I read it literarily. You know, how do I understand the words without the Torah 12 path perspective? Drash is how do I read, how the Chazal read it with the perspective of Torah 12 path? And that can be both Midrash Halacha, looking at the laws, and Midrash Agadah. That's Robert Cover has this great essay called Nomos and Narrative. Laws and the law and the history side of it, the stories.
Both. Wait, when you mouse over, what was that?
Nomos and Narrative was an essay.
Oh, you're linking to it? Okay.
What? Yeah.
Why did you put a question mark by it? The philosophical?
No, that's my definition. Okay. If you look at it on the website.
Oh, you always do that? You always change it to a
over the part for words that are in the glossary section of the website, it pulls out those words and has a little question mark because those are the hard words.
Oh, okay. I just learned how to do that in CSS.
How to change the cursor. Yes, you can do that.
Oh, cool. Okay.
So anyway, so he has an essay about that. But part of that is that the difference between, you know, halacha and agada. So Midrash Agada is the Chazal looking at the stories and telling the stories there. Now we abbreviate that as Midrash. But you should really call it Agada. So that's what we'll call it. And the problem is that the stories seem so outlandish, we can't imagine. What are you thinking? What does that mean?
It's also hard, like in modern Hebrew, if you say Agada, it means a fairy tale. Like that's the modern definition of Agada, if you were to say that word.
Right.
Like.
Which is the way it sounds. I mean, what does it mean? Now I have arm extended, you know, many amot. But really has the same idea as Midrash Halacha. Halacha is telling us what Torah Shebe'al Peh has to say about the Torah Shebe'al Peh. It's the lesson. Someone puts it often. I like the quote.
Yeah.
I heard this originally told about Donald Trump, Lahavdil. They have to take it seriously, but not literally.
Oh, that's, I hear it.
Okay. And that's what we're going to look at. Foreman doesn't use that term explicitly. But it talks about that's how, you know, we need to look at the Agadot. And to do that, we have to go back. Now, the way we look at that idea of taking it seriously but not literally, really comes from Maharal. And this is an excellent article from Hakira called the Bergola and the Revolution, a Gaelic scholarship. So the Maharal, of course, living in 16th century Prague. And everyone starts from the Maharal. Everyone quotes the Maharal, right? You look at all these Machshava people, Cook, Putner, Moshe Shapira, all of that. So we're going to look at the Maharal. But what's interesting is that it actually should have come from the Rambam much earlier. So the Rambam, when he's talking to the Perka Chelek, introduction to the, where he has the Ikarim, the Anani Mamins, and Perish and Mishnayot, talks about three groups of people looking at Agadah. The first group, the Keter Rishon, takes everything literally and believes it. That's what the rabbi said. That must be actually what happened. And he calls them Aniye Hadat. They have poor minds. Yesh l'hitzda'er alehem l'sichutam. We should pity them for their foolishness. The second group takes everything literally and therefore considers Chazal fools. Right? This is just stupid. It's a god, it's a fairy tale. Doesn't mean anything. And he says that group is a ket arra, a cursed group, the elo hapitaim, and they are fools. There are a lot of Hebrew words for fools, I realize. Must be a common thing. They're stupid. Okay, but hakesh lishi, the third group, the heim chayashem atim admaon, and they are by God really few, okay? Only a few people can get this. They know that Chazal alayhem shalom ina medabrim hitulim. They do not speak foolishness. Another word. I'm sure the Rambam has very precise meanings, or whatever the Arabic equivalent, because this is the Perek Mishnayot between pitaim sichlut and hitulim. But anyway, they know that Chazal aren't talking foolishness. And they truly believe. That's the bottom line. There's the open meaning, there's a literal meaning, there's a nistar, there's an inner meaning within it as well. Take the Agada allegorically. And so everything that seems impossible that they say, they're talking allegorically, it's a metaphor. Use derech hachamim hagdolim, because all smart people talk that way about these kind of deep concepts. If you look at it, be one of these, this third group, it's a tera davar medivreihem. If you see something in the Gemara and the Midrashim, tadat marchit onto that seems far fetched. Tamon v'titbonenbo, you need to spend some time, think about it. The dacha shuchidam mashal, realize that it is metaphoric, allegoric. The tishkav ashuk haleh v'tirat harayon, and you should stop and think and work on this. Think about it a lot. B'chiburov is for a toe and its context and all and what it implies. Tachshovim so kavanat ha-sechel, kavanat ha-yosher, and you should try to figure out what it actually does mean. And quote unquote, halit limto divrei chepetz b'katuv yosher divrei amen. But others tistachel b'siyafriza, and then you can look in my book. Yoel luck and it'll help. Bezrat Hashem. What book is he talking about? Because then he talks about what the Mishalim mean, what they're trying to learn. The inyano v'lo yaspik b'inyan zeh, and with this in this inyan, and I realize that he's saying as I've tried to work out this, you know, understanding the works of Chazal and what I got it to mean, that v'lo yaspik b'inyan zeh levado, I could not say enough about it. And if I try to abridge it as much as possible, it'll take more than 100 pages. And I don't have to, I'm writing a parish of Mishnah here. I can't take 100. I mean, this introduction to Perek HaChelek is long enough. It's just an introduction to one chapter of Mishnah and it's already 30 pages long. I don't have time to put another 100 pages in here. Therefore, I'm going to leave it to its own place. The Sefer She'achaberato, I will write another book. The Perushe Elo Yisadot, I will explain all of these. I got it. That's the Rambam in Perush Mishnayot, which he wrote as a young man. He failed. In the Mor Nevuchim, written much later, he talks about this. That's the Pines translation of the Nebuchim. He didn't write it in English. He had promised in the commentary in the Mishnah that we'd explain strange subjects in the Book of Correspondence, which I looked it up. The Hebrew translation of that is Sefer Hashva'a, not correspondence of letters, like corresponding with someone, but correspondence means things that correspond to one another, a definition.
Like dictionary. Equality?
Yeah, no. A dictionary. Like what is these are metaphors. What do those metaphors mean?
Oh.
Like he said, being a parent of Nevuchim, he talks about the Torah when it says that God stands. What does that imply?
God is he said that there is like Kalim. If right. It says he stretched out his arm, this is something
this is what,
wherever you what, see it, it means
that. Right. But he would claim that there is an overarching principle there. That's a way to understand Agadata. And he was going to write this Sefer Hashva'a, the Book of Correspondences. The letter being a book in which we promise to explain all the different manifestly contradicts the truth and departs from the intelligible. They are all parables. However, when many years ago we began these books and composed a part of them, our beginning to explain matters in this way did not commend itself to us.
Wait, who is the we?
It's the editorial we.
Okay.
This is Ron talking about himself.
Okay.
Right. We began to write this book and we realized that it wasn't working. It did not commend itself to us. For we saw that if we should adhere to parables and concealment of what ought to be concealed, we would, as it were, have replaced one individual by another same species. That I could explain everything, all these concepts, which are hard concepts, which can't be really put in words, that really need to be more you tell stories about, that he would end up basically writing his own midrashim about the midrashim. That would be pointless. If, on the other hand, we explained what ought to be explained, we said it outright, be unsuitable for the vulgar among the people, that we'd just be flattening out this and it would be too trivial. It's not like it means something simple. It's not something you can write a dictionary for. These are deeper concepts. So he found that he could either make up his own midrashim or completely miss the point of the midrashim. Either way, it wasn't going to work. In view of these considerations, we have given up composing these two books in the way which they were begun. That's his introduction to the Mor Nevuchim. So he ends up in the Mor Nevuchim, basically what he does instead of that. He's explaining some things, but not a whole dictionary of Agadita. So his son, the Avram ben Rambam, talks about that. Is the Mamar Drashot Chazal. That's printed in the beginning of the En Yaakov. Avimar Rizal, so my father. Chashav l'chaber sefer p'pirushav. I planned on writing a book explaining Agadata. It says, the way he mentioned the Perush Mishnah, Basof natah me'alav and eventually gave up. Vayirah meget Moshe megeshet elav. Torah quote there. Moshe was afraid to go near it. Asher amar b'tichilat ha'morah, the way he says in direction of the book. And then he explains why he feels it's necessary to do some explaining there. And that he's talked about there are five kinds of midrashim, some of them midrash halacha, but the kinds we talk about are first, achelak rishon, michalkei drashot hamisha. So the first kind of drasha, heim drashot al pi pishutat. They are ones that make sense as pshat. You can take them literally. They just read them as they are. The Chazal try to explain the pasuk. That it makes sense to those who think about it. Where the Rama put it as a nistar v'nigla. Other kind of drashot have an inside and outside meaning, a literal meaning and an inner meaning. And the intention of what they're saying is the inner meaning. Not the outer meaning. And the reason why they have this external meaning, the literal meaning, which is different from what they're really trying to say, the reason is generally been explained because they're subtle, because they need understanding rather than definition. A lot of them were explained in the more Nevuchim, Parish and Mishnah, Rambam does explain some of those things, but not systematically. So that's usually where we sort of said, I got it. Some are basically, they fit in the Pshat, they make sense. And you could read them as being Pshat HaGadah, as opposed to Midrash HaGadah. Some of it, some clearly have a deeper meaning. I cannot imagine how that possibly could have happened if we were watching the story unfold, so that they're meant to be, so that the Chazal are saying the story to give you a sense of what's going on in the deeper sense of the word, what Yael Ziegler calls the subconscious of the text. You know, because the moral concepts can't be put into unambiguous words. That's what the Rambam found. You can't say, here's what you need to do, here's what you need to do. You need the stories talking about the people who are doing those things, and you have to look at their attitudes and feelings. The Maharal, in his writings, and you can read that article by Rabbi Eisen about why he felt necessary to put this down, mostly in response to Christian mocking the Talmud. But he's much more radical. He claims that Chazal are never interested in the literary side. The Gadata are never meant b'derek pshat. The only reason it would be brought down in the Gemara is because there was this inyan pnimi. I did that wrong. That's inyan pnimi here, not the chitoni, it's the deeper meaning. In other words,
but aren't there how do you know? Aren't there some things that are meant to be taken? Like he's saying there's some. And the Rambam is just saying you should just.
The Maharal is saying no. Right. The Maharal definitely says that, okay, if they're bringing it in the Gemara, they're just not interested in the literary side. Right? That's something that there are people that, you know, later Parshanim were interested in Pshat, in analyzing Pshat. We'll quote that. Okay? That's not what it's there for. You can ask what's bothering Rashi, right? What in the text forces Rashi to say this? It makes no sense to ask what's bothering Gemara. Gemara would say that's just not a relevant question. It was not interesting, or at least it was interesting to them. It wasn't what ended up in the Gemara. Okay? Rashi says, Anilo Bati Elo Pshutosho Mikra, Lagada Hamiyashevet Divreya Mikra. He says explicitly, right? I'm going to understand Pshat. I'm going to give him the Agadot that help understand the pshat, right? The words there, right? We call it davar dibur davur al ofanav. Everything said on its base. This is the basic understanding of Torah. So he's going to look at the pshat, and then and then he'll bring out a guide to that address problems in the pshat. That's fine. This is the way the Rashba, right? Rashi's grandson, 300 years before the Maharal, talking about why we look at pshat. This is his famous introduction to his commentary and that ends up in Parshat Vayeshev. everybody who loves wisdom understands. Mash limdono rabotenu, that Chazal said the following, ki ein mikra yotzei midei pshuto. Torah can't, you can't leave the pshat behind. That has significance as well. But ki ikra shel Torah, but the essence of Torah, the important part, balo lamdenu, lo dienu, rimzot pshat, bagadot, valachot dinyenu. It's what we call midrash, the midrash. That's the essence. That's the important part. And when he means Rishonim, he's talking about Chazal, the Tanaim and Amarim, because they were so pious. They dealt with the drash. What does the Torah Shabbat Pet tell me, and where? How do I see that in the Torah Shabbat Pet? Shenika, because that's what's important. Therefore, they did not deal with the depth of Pshuto Shel Mikra. I, however, Rashbam, feel it's important, so I'm going to do that. So I didn't. And here's, this is the Ram, this is the Maharal, the Be'er HaGula, which is his multi-volume essay on Agadata. L'bo Chachamim l'daber min ha'sei b'ativit. Chachamim did not bother talking about natural cause and effect. G'atona pachot ha'sei b'ativit, because that's pretty trivial. Because that sort of thing dealing with natural cause and effect is appropriate. The chachmei teva for scientists, the rofim for doctors, but not for smart people. Just
did he say
chachamim
is smart people or like chachamim with like a capital ches?
Yes, but I'm just to make me a little more humble. I will note the contrast between rofim and chachamim. Okay. So the pshat, the Siba TV is okay for Rofin. Right, but not for Chachamim. Obviously, what he really means here is Chachamim and Kapil Chet. Vahemzal, Dibru min Siba Chemechayeva Teva. They're talking about the spirit, the underlying rules, the underlying things that make the world, the universe possible, the spiritual side. Machachish Devarze, Machachish Hemunava Torah. And denying this is denying Torah. Right, you try to read any of these things as being dealing with the Siba TV, you are denying your Amunah here. He gets very upset. He was very upset with Azaria Derasini, who wrote the book, a contemporary, who wrote a book on the Mi'oranayim on Midrash, meaning I got it to literally, very firm, taking him seriously. But he says, no, that's just terrible. I'm just horrified that it was ever written. You can't do that. But this is the way to understand them. So the kol davar yisibat tivit mechayev oto, that everything has a natural cause. But oto sibat tivit yisibat eloki. There's a spiritual truth behind that. Who has sibat yisibat? Mizeh dibru chachamim. That's what chachamim are talking about.
I know this is a side point, but that was the name of the song of the year this year, at least on Israeli radio.
Sibat sibit.
Siba, you know the song by
No, I did not. No.
Who was he's like very popular.
Yishai Rebo?
I learned about him from Chani. Yeah, from Yishai Rebo.
Oh, I learned from Liora. Okay. Now I have to look this up.
Okay, well, it was like, at least according to the radio station here in the north, it was the Shir Hashana or whatever. And it's called Siba to Siba. I don't know if it's from here. I think it's Yishai
Rebo. I don't know. Sibat HaSibot.
Oh, sorry. Different one then. Wait, but just a question for you, and like just a general question. When we look at Midrash, so there's like Midrash Halacha. Oh.
Right. Yes.
No, this is a song. Yeah.
Oh, should I play it?
You can play it if you want. And then I have to ask you a question.
The video is of him sitting in the floor in the Yamanah.
Whatever's left of it.
So for deep by לנו שערי אמונה, שערי הבנה, שאין לנו מלך, אלא אתה, סיבת הסיבה, תהילת הרעילות, נורת העילות, ורק לך, נאה לדור, על כל הימים, בכל הלילות.
What was the last letter? Sorry, you knew that you were asking.
Okay, just in terms of the overall structure, and I feel like we did this with Ray Shulman in school, but like, or maybe we, I don't remember. I feel like I used to have like a chart or something. When you look at Midrash, like all the things from Chazal, oh, you know what? Maybe I saw it when I was on Safari. Like, all the things from Chazal, there's a specific thing that's just Midrash and Gad, and that's what he's talking about? He's not talking about, like, Gemara in general.
Well, Mara basically is talking about the Agadot that are in the Gemara. But there are other collections of Midrashim, which he doesn't really address directly. I think he would include those as part of the Chazal. So that the Gemara includes both Midrash Halakha and Midrash Agadah.
But like, how would you know that what you're reading is a Midrash Agadah, not like?
It's not Halakha. I mean, it's telling you, know, Halakha is that there's 39 Avot Melachot.
Okay, so you're saying it's very clear, like when you read like the first Gemara that we read about her arm, it's clear that this is not Halakha?
Right.
Because it just gets confusing, because if you're saying not to take it literally, on the other hand, we're like learning halacha from there, so.
Right, but you're not learning halacha from there. That's the point. Clearly, that is not something you learn halacha. I mean, there may be, you're right, there may be areas where that it's fuzzy. What do we take as story as opposed to that? I mean, the classic question where that's fuzzy is Lashon Hara. Benjamin Brown has a great article about sort of the basic controversy with the Chafetz Chaim. Writing the Chafetz Chaim, turning what's fundamentally should be stories about, you know, don't say bad things, and that the issue of Lashon Hara as being an attitude as opposed to, you know, their rules as opposed to laws. And the Chafetz Chaim basically invented the idea of them as laws, like here's what you do and here's what you don't do. And it's an opposition because it made it too inflexible, which made it easy to do, you know, made it easy to kind of go for the letter of the law and miss the spirit of the law. That, you know, now that you know, well, I can say this sort of thing if it's the tachlis, so I can just say, like, argue it's got tachlis, and then I can say whatever I want, kind of find the point there. As opposed to saying,
yeah, like, that's not really according to the letter of the law either. Like, there's a lot of things.
Right. And I think overall it was worth it because people weren't taking the story seriously. You know, but he pulled the stories and derived from them actual halakha, these are what you can do. And that's not clear that that's was what it was meant to be. So there is some fuzziness there. But I think we're looking at Bat Paro and saying, here's a law about babies and bulrushes. Halakha.
Stretch out your whatever. Okay.
Both those are things that look at the text and say things that don't seem consistent with the text. What are they talking about? So to give example that I like, it's from Brejev, talking about going to the Akeda. Avram gets up, he saddles his donkey, takes his two guys with him, Yitzhak Beno and his son, Hashem Malokim. Goes to the place. Rashi, and this says, Shtei Narav, he says, Yishmael ba'Eliezer. Those are his two guys he took. Right, where does that come from? Well, it comes from Vayikra Rabba. It is an Agadata. Rashi's bringing it. So the Gur Arye, the Maharal, explaining Rashi, is explaining what's bothering Rashi. And it says, his two people, Chilohio Rakshne El Eluna Arim, like he had a lot more than two. You know, it's not Shnei Min Na'arav, it's not two of his people, it's his two boys. So what does it mean, Shnei Na'arav, Elu Shnei Na'arim, Yishmael Belzad, the ones who are named. Talk about the matters, abhors a vacuum. The only names we have are Yishmael and Eliezer, so presumably that's one that, you know, the two ones that we've seen before. That's Rashi. But why even say that at all? Why bother saying that? That's the deeper meaning. And that he gets into in the Derech Chaim and his Kantei Pirkei Avot. That gets very philosophical. Source 13. Kiyesh begam Adam Gimel Chalakim.
But you're saying that Rashi brought them Kilo Batzi El Pshuto Shel Mikra. And he's saying, who are these people? These are the people, and here's why it says this.
Right.
But if you're looking at the Midrash on its own, you're saying it had a completely different MO.
Right. That the Na'arav was, you could argue that was the hook for putting this concept on, but that's not why they felt necessary to mention it. They were trying to teach us something about Abraham and the Akedah.
Okay.
Which is the way he puts it here, right? Because the person has three parts, Chelka Charu Sechel, Chelka Shiyu Nefesh, Chelka Shiyu Guf. Okay, that's the idea of, I quoted Viktor Frankl here about body, mind, and spirit. And it's not so much, not physical body, talking about the Nefesh Bahami. In fact, you have a, you know, physical needs, you have emotional needs, and the intellectual needs on top of that. Soma, psyche, and nous in Greek. And the Kabbalists would call it the Nefesh, Ruach, Neshama. Those are three parts. So, what is that? They're looking at Abraham. Abraham had separated himself completely from the base physical. Rak rochev alav. That's Abraham is rochev ala chamor. Right, he's riding a donkey. That's the chamor. He is on top of, in control of the chamor. Umetale alav yoter kachar ruil if he medregato. That's what Abraham could do. Zeshemar shneina rabimo. Abraham shneina. And then he's, what are these two narim? He tells the narim, shvu el machamor. You stay here with the chamor. And the Gemara says, Amadomela Chamor, you people don't like the donkey. You stay back. You know that I gotta that and Rashi brings us that Abraham sees a cloud on the mountain, Yitzhak sees a cloud on the mountain, his two Narayim don't see anything, so he says, you stay here with the donkey, and we'll go on from here. Because you're like the donkey, you don't have that spiritual level. Because those two other, the state Arab represents the other two parts of the soul. And they're closer to the physical. He's overcoming the Yetzer, which is the sign of the goof. He left those behind. Abraham Shayabro Chebala Chamor. Abraham was riding on the chamor, and that that all the parts of his soul, of the human soul, as we said, were perfect in him. When he calls what Frankl calls the spirit, which is who you really are. So Abraham in the Midrash represents the seichel, which is in control of the chamor. And then with them are the goof and the nefesh, the soma and the psyche, the physical needs and the emotional needs. Those are there, but in order to pass this test, he has to leave those behind. He has to be completely in control of everything. And leave the chamor behind, leave the goof, leave the nefesh behind. And that's what he says, that's what that means there, with Yishmael symbolizing the physical, and Eliezer is the nefesh, and Abraham is the seichel on top of all of that. And that's what it means to pass a test. Kachil Abraham shu rochev al hachamor nivdal men hachomer shnei na'aravimo. And he goes with these other parts of his needs and has to leave those behind in order to pass that test. That's pretty deep.
That's pretty deep.
Right. So that's true. You know, that the Chazal are not telling us about what happened in the story. They're telling us about the nature of what it means to pass a test like that. If you have to leave behind your feelings, to overcome your feelings, overcome your instincts, and then move on and obey Hashem. We don't care whether the two who are with him were actually were Yishmael or Eliezer at all. Or in this week's parsha, the passage we quoted above, right? V'tere bat paro l'chot ha'yar, v'narateho chot ha'yad ha'yar, right? She's going to bathe, and her na'arot, that's na'arot back here again, l'chot are walking on the side of the Nile. And Rashi quotes, ha'yad ha'yar, v'tere omru l'chot l'shon mita, that the na'aroteh, her maidservants who were going, they were going to death. By a very Heideggerian Tzayim Tzum Tot. They were walking to death. Kamo, as it says, like by Esau, I'm going to die. That's what they're doing. The Gemara says that they were struck down. They were killed because they were trying to stop her from Bat Paro from saving Moshe. So they were killed. And we can show that from the pasuk. Why write it at all? Why mention that I wrote if it didn't have something to tell us? So again, what's bothering Rashi on that? On this. So Rashi is asking, why bother writing this at all? What do we learn from that? So Chazal said, "Shahayu holchot lemita." That holchot means they were going to die. They tried to stop from saving Moshe. Kimita tikra holech, as we say, ani holech b'derech kol haaretz. That's David telling his son from last week's Haftarah. I'm going the way
we use the word holech and halach in so many other contexts, like halachta bidrachav. Like,
yes.
Are we always supposed to read it as holech lamut?
No, right here.
Okay.
Okay, this is something about this story here, that they are holech lamut. Here again, v'yesh remez, if you like gematria, ki holchot is written. Haser ketiv holchot gematria mita. Right, it's 55 + 30 + 20 = 55, 455, and mita is 450, 455. Get a gematria there. Well, chod is a hint for mita. Yirah she'inyan, mita el yona. And the truth, and you need to understand that this is a higher kind of death. They didn't drop dead as they're walking there. Because they aren't claiming that if you're watching it, they would just look that they're walking. It's a higher death. They lost their mazel. They lost their fate. The gamrei completely. They had no more power to stop her. They were lost to history. And this explanation of what we're talking about, that's why it didn't write that they died, because I wouldn't say that they died. It's allegoric. It talks explicitly about how Moshe was saved. That if that's what happened, it should have said that they died. So then, that this was not like an actual miracle that they dropped dead in front of them, because if they had, Bat Paro would have run back to the palace screaming, "They're all dead! What happened?" So they didn't die. What does it mean? This is Rav Huttner explaining that. The way to understand what the Maral is saying, God looked at the Torah and created the world. The Mela, Kol Shavim Panim La Torah, Yesh Lam Panim Makbilim Ba'olamot. That there is a world in which those aspects of the Torah are true. There are ways of looking at the drash as being true.
Makbil means
Corresponding, the hashba'a, right?
It means like parallel, like.
It does.
Like kavim makbilim.
But here, right here, it means makabel one. I would say corresponding to, parallel to. Right, that there is a way of looking at the world that corresponds to this drash. This is what the Maharal is suggesting. What that means is when the drush says that they died, it's talking about they lost their mazal, they lost their fate. They lost their ability to oppose saving Moshe. That has nothing to do with the world of Pshat. The mundane world, if you look watching at it, you would never see it. They didn't die. Don't take that literally. So that's why it's not mentioned in the Torah as Pshat. It's not there. Right? This is something you read as Drash. They cease to matter. By not
recognizing. They died on a midrashic level, on an agadic level.
Yes, right. They no longer had any part to do with the story. They were lost to history. As opposed to Bat Paro. So now right form is gonna read our agada. But now it comes once you look at that, it's obvious what it means that her arms stretch many amot in order to get Moshe. So when Rashi looks at Amata, we quote that again. She tashtacht Amata v'tigacha. She sent forth her maidservant and took it. And Amata et shivchata. That's Pshat. Rabbi Tana Dershu. And why does Rashi need to bring the drash? Because we've suddenly gone from Na'arot to Amma, we've changed the word there, which says, you know, Mary del Dorshe. Like, clearly there's something there for me to pay attention to. He's going to say, Ravitana Dorshu Lashon Yad. They said, no, it's Yad. But I'll be feed the in Amata. You can't take the possibility to say that as meaning what the text means, because an Amma, as it means servant, meaning arm, has a dagesh in there. It's Amata with a dagesh, not an Amma. Me made service has no digestion. It's a different word. And that's true. You're looking up. Dugusha. It should be Dugusha. The him does shoot Amata Jada, finished drama, but Amata Amot Harbe, that her hand stretched out so far. It's entirely preposterous to imagine what she dared to do here and actually succeeds at doing, that she raises child and proud son of Israel, the palace of Paro. It's impossible, right? Doesn't mean she stretched out her hand and it stretched. What this princess managed to do with Moses, guided only by her allegiance to what is right, good, and noble, is nothing short of flabbergasting. And that, I think, is a perfect medrash. Okay, to quote Mark Browning, man's reach must exceed, should exceed his grasp. That's what she did. She reached further than she could possibly grasp. She reached further than her arm could possibly reach. In a spiritual sense, she did the impossible. There's no way she could have saved this baby, allowed him to grow up as a Hebrew. The man's reach should exceed his grasp, but what's a heaven for? You've heard that quote before? Browning?
I don't think so.
It's a great quote. Reagan quoted it when the Challenger exploded. Think about the trying for things you can't reach. So this is the way Rabbi Purim puts it. The princess reached for that which was beyond her grasp, and her arm extended. She actually got what she was reaching for. So yes, of course, she sent her Amahar maidservant. But the Midrash point is that in doing this, she was in effect able to reach for something completely beyond her and get it. So as God can allow your arm to stretch to actually take hold of what would otherwise remain a mere dream. The bottom line is that Chazal and Midrash Agadah aren't looking at history, they're looking at destiny and the power that we have to create it. And that's the difference between the Hanarot or Holchot Mita, her hand stretched out further than it possibly could, because you can't achieve great things.
Wait, so the Ama, the Shifra who reached out, was not one of the Na'arot, or was?
Okay, so if you take, right, if you're looking at the Gemara, look at the Gemara, it says that, yes, one of the Na'arot were not killed. For it to fulfill this. But we're not saying that. Okay. Anyway, so in actual fact, anyway, so if you want to read the story, it says, yes, you had a bunch of Na'arot who were walking, and she said, oh, to one of them, you go get that basket. What actually happened was she did something that was completely unexpected and impossible for her to succeed at by sending one of her Amot to get that basket back. And despite the fact that it was impossible, she still did it and raised Moshe.
But they're saying here too that this like Vayishlach et Amata or whatever, like it goes also for like the whole rest of the parsha, almost.
That's right. I mean, Forman is saying that, right? All of her raising the child, that's all part of her arm being.
This is all the stretch, the stretchiness.
It is a stretch.
That's very nice. Thank you, Abba.
Yeah. Have a good Shabbos.
Okay, you too. Have a good Shabbos. Get some sleep.
Yay.